If you scan online, some scary numbers are being thrown around that half of the people who do get infected can die from avian flu. What's the truth behind that? And since it's been found in Nevada, what are state officials doing to prevent its spread? J.J. Goicoechea, a veterinarian and head of the State Department of Agriculture, and UNLV professor and epidemiologist Brian Labus unraveled some of that with producer Ann Davis.
J.J., welcome to State of Nevada.
Thank you, Ann. Thank you for taking the time to visit with me this morning.
Of course. So starting out, what happens to a dairy cow that has bird flu?
Well, that's a good question, Ann. So high path avian influenza, or we're referring to it as H5N1. That is the variant of the bird flu that we are dealing with in our dairy cows. Actually, is fairly mild in a dairy cow. So we can see clinical signs that range from a decrease of feed consumption. They may have a little bit of a cough, a runny nose. And then the main sign that we see is a decrease in milk production. And so that is the first sign that we often see.
So how would a dairy cow catch this disease?
So the H5N1 variant that we are dealing with in our dairy cows is actually spread cow to cow, and it can be spread mechanically. In the state of Nevada, we know that the affected premise we had, we did import that virus from California on some other cattle.
So how did you find the H5N1 virus here in Nevada? Was this part of routine testing you've been doing, or was it based on a tip?
The original detection of H5N1 in dairy cows in Nevada was due to the producer themselves thinking that they may have had it. Again, those clinical signs are fairly consistent across the country when you do see dairy herds infected with H5N1. They noticed a decrease in appetite of some of these cows. They noticed that these cows didn't seem quite right. And then that milk production dropped. The dairy thought that they may have had it. This is a dairy that has operations in other states, so they are familiar with what H5N1 looked like in those other states. They did notify us. They pulled the samples. We submitted those samples to a national laboratory at Washington State, and those were confirmed to be non-negative. So we sent those for confirmation to the National Veterinary Services Lab in Ames, Iowa, and they were positive for H5N1. So that is how we originally found that initial detection. Now, and if I can, I would like to go into what we're doing since then. So on December 16th, because we didn't really know the full magnitude of this virus in the state of Nevada. So on December 16th, the Department of Agriculture was the first state in the nation to start their silo testing. And silos are the big tanks that we see at our dairy processing facilities. So we have four of those fluid plants in the state of Nevada, and we started testing those on the 16th of December because we wanted to know if this virus was more widespread. We only had one plant that had virus in it. That is not surprising because that is the plant that receives milk from the one infected dairy that we have now. Nowhere else in the state did we detect H5N1, so we're fairly confident that we're keeping this virus contained in Nye County.
The Department of Agriculture has also said that it'll be attempting to reduce the starling population, noting that the birds are both non-native to Nevada, but also carriers of bird flu. How soon does this starling reduction process start?
So the Nevada Department of Agriculture, in conjunction with United States Department of Agriculture, APHIS Wildlife Services, has actually done some starling removal up in northern Nevada. We did that over the last few weeks. We started the second week of December. We did see a large population of starlings on a lot of dairies up there. This, again, was before we knew if we had the disease in northern Nevada. We hadn't started our silo testing. So out of an abundance of caution, and we routinely do this anyway because they do spread this disease. So it's not just because of the H5N1 that we're doing this. Annually, we do try to reduce that population of starlings that affect our farmers and our dairies because they can spread disease, and they are economically impactful to these operations. Now, while we did do it in northern Nevada, we've continued our surveillance in southern Nevada, and since that time, those starlings have migrated on. from southern Nevada. We will obviously keep an eye on it with the weather patterns. It's been a little warmer than normal. We may see some more startings migrate back in, but at this time, we are not expecting to do any more work in southern Nevada unless those populations change.
What about other wild birds? Are they also culled in a process like this, or is it just starlings?
Yeah, so we don't cull other wild birds, predominantly just starlings. Ravens can also carry this disease, and they are also another species that can be targeted with our efforts if we do see too many of those, again, on the landscape. But for right now, we just focused on the starlings on these dairies.
I've been talking with J.J. Goycochea about the current bird flu outbreak and its potential impact in Nevada. He's the current state agriculture director. J.J., thank you.
Thank you, Ann.
Now we turn to Dr. Brian Labus, an epidemiologist and assistant professor at UNLV's School of Public Health. Brian, welcome back to State of Nevada.
Thanks for having me back.
What happens to a person who has severe bird flu, such as the man who was, you know, just hospitalized last month in Louisiana?
Bird flu in humans is basically the same as human flu in humans. It's not a different disease. It's just another type of influenza. So the disease we're all used to seeing, that's what you would get. You'd have a fever, cough, sore throat, serious problems breathing. The person we heard about in Louisiana had serious respiratory issues. But for the most part, people that get this disease have very mild or no symptoms at all.
Oh, interesting. So this can be asymptomatic, it sounds like?
That's what we've seen so far. We've seen a lot of people infected with no symptoms or very mild symptoms. The first cases we had reported in the U.S. had some conjunctivitis, so their eyes turned a little red, and that was it. They didn't even have respiratory symptoms. So the disease that we're seeing is a big deal for animals, but for humans right now, we haven't seen a very serious disease other than a couple of isolated cases.
So cases like the one in Louisiana, those are pretty rare.
We've seen one case in Louisiana. There was a teenager earlier in Canada that had a serious disease. But this is not the normal pattern of disease in people. These are people that got infected. It sounds like they had some mutations after they got infected. So it's really what happened in their body. It wasn't like they picked up a serious strain. It became a serious strain in them.
So about the mutations, from what I've heard, this strain of bird flu is only one mutation away from being transmissible between humans. Is that true?
Well, it's hard to say exactly what's going to happen. We know that mutations happen constantly with influenza. You get good mutations, you get bad mutations, things that help the virus spread, things that make it so it doesn't spread. If you get the right combination of those, we could start to see person-to-person spread. But we haven't seen that yet.
How likely do you believe it to be, you know, that it does mutate in this direction? Is that something that you see happening?
I don't think anybody can predict what's going to happen with mutations because they are completely random. And when you get this mutation, it changes the shape of the proteins in the virus. And the shape is what's really important for interacting with our immune system. Most of those change the virus in a way that makes it so it's not viable for the virus. The virus dies out. So we see mutations all the time. What's going to happen with them is really difficult to predict. We can't put a probability on it and say this is how likely we are to see it. It's something that we're watching. It's something that can happen, and that's why we're monitoring it so closely.
So as it stands right now, how are humans catching this virus?
The majority of infections that we've seen have been people that have worked directly with infected poultry or infected dairy cows. So they've been around sick animals and they've been exposed to a lot of the virus, and that's how they've been infected. We have had other cases, though, where there isn't that clear link to agriculture. But this is something that's out there in the environment. Birds are carrying it around the country. That's how it moves around. So if you had contact with wild birds, if you had a backyard chicken flock that got infected or something like that, we can have those types of infections. This is why we investigate every single case. We want to know how those people got it. If it's through the normal mechanisms, we're not as concerned. If we can't explain how it happened, we really start to wonder how they were infected.
Out of curiosity, I do know a couple of people who keep chickens in their backyard for eggs and for meat and all of that. How worried should those people be who have those backyard chickens? Is this something that they need to be concerned about?
Well, if you have backyard chicken flocks, this is something that could potentially cause your entire flock to die. When we've seen poultry get infected, it's a horrible disease. It can wipe out an entire chicken flock in a day or two. Wow. So if your backyard flock gets infected, it's not going to survive it. This is the really serious problem with this, and this is why we pay such close attention to this in agriculture, because it can have massive economic impacts, wiping out an entire farm, basically. And so we spend a lot of time trying to keep the birds that we're raising for eggs and for meat away from wild birds. It's a lot more difficult to do that with cattle. They have to graze outside, and so it's a different sort of interaction. But in that case, the cattle don't tend to have a very serious disease. It's been a mild infection. They're sick for a few days. Milk production goes down, but they generally recover.
So how does this current H5N1 outbreak differ from previous ones?
There are always strains of influenza circulating in birds. When they start to move into animals, we get concerned and we track those things. We are seeing different strains of H5N1 now than we saw previously. So for the past 20 years or so, we've been tracking different H5N1 strains. It's caused short temporary outbreaks, kind of like we're seeing now, and then it changes and becomes something else, and we don't have that outbreak anymore. So right now, there's always that potential that it could become something worse, or it could kind of just trail off, and that's the end of it, and we don't see any more of it. That happens with disease and populations. So compared to the past, it has that same potential as causing a problem. Those other ones didn't turn into anything. Now we're looking at it and saying, this could be the one that actually does. Chances are that it won't, but it could be.
H5N1's human fatality rate has been cited by the CDC to be around 52%. However, from what I've seen, some researchers say that that number is likely too high. Can you explain why human fatality rates for the bird flu are sort of hard to pin down?
A fatality rate is basically the percent of all the people infected who die from the disease. If people get asymptomatic disease, if they have very mild infections and are never identified, we don't know they were ever infected. All we do is find the people who are seriously ill in the hospital and say, well, of those who were hospitalized, 50% died. But that doesn't count the vast majority of people who never made it to the hospital. This is the same thing we saw in 2009 when the first strains popped up of the new H1N1 strain. We saw fatality rates in places that were 100% because they were testing people when they were hospitalized and about to die. But it didn't take into account the fact that only a tiny percent of people were hospitalized and most had very mild illness. Same thing was true in China in the early days of COVID. We saw really high mortality rates because we were testing the people who were the sickest and about to die. So it basically is the result of us testing the sickest people and not getting an accurate picture of how the disease affects the entire population.
So the asymptomatic cases really kind of skew things, it sounds like.
Right. So if only one out of 100 people with the disease go into the hospital and one out of every two die, well, that doesn't mean most people are going to die from flu. It means most have mild disease, never make it to the hospital, and that's why those numbers get skewed. We see that every time where there's this perception that there's a very high death rate because of the way we identify the cases.
So how can people keep themselves and their families safe from something like H5N1?
At this point in time, there's not much for the average person to do. The concern for H5N1 right now is people employed in settings where they are around sick animals. So if you're working on a dairy farm, if you are responsible for taking care of sick animals, you are at much higher risk. It becomes a major occupational issue, and you have to take all the precautions to minimize your risk in your workplace. For the average person, though, you're not around people with this disease. You're not around sick animals. So there's really nothing you need to do. This is why public health exists, though. We track these things, try to figure out what's going on and see, is there something that people actually need to do? But right now, it's an occupational disease for people that are working with cattle and poultry.
Well, Brian, we're going to have to leave the conversation here. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
That was producer Ann Davis with UNLV Professor Brian Labus and J.J. Gokachia, head of the Nevada Department of Agriculture.